Hey everybody, this is Johnny Gioeli from Hardline. You're listening to the Gangus and Ragman Show. Horns up, baby!
The Right to Rock.
Special night for you at Evening With a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So that's a killer masterpiece theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know what I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. To say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. I do, English and Russian at the same time. I don't know.
Starting to feel very British as I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest and bid you adieu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please listen to our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya.
Horns up.
Horns up.
Where are you at, Alan? Where do
Texas.
You live?
I'm in Texas. I'm in Houston.
Oh, right on. Oh, shit, man. Do I have memories in Houston?
Oh, how long has it been?
Holy crap. Let me think. So, 80s, man. 80, blah, 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 88, 89. So, we used to do our, like, brunette Hollywood would show, and then since we had our own tour bus that we worked our asses off to buy,
uh-huh.
A big piece of crap, but anyway, we would just take off and we would go to like Houston. We played a place called, I think, the Rock Zone or something.
That sounds familiar. Cardius was a big one here, but the Rock Zone sounds vaguely familiar. I can't remember. But yeah, there were a few of those type clubs that had kind of popped up in the 80s when the scene was really strong here.
That's right. And so we would stay there for a week. We'd play like the whole week there, which was really interesting. And then we would go to Austin and play a week there. We'd go, you know what I mean? We'd
go, nice.
I'll hit all these places, and then we'd go back and do our L.A. show. But anyway, and I remember this club specifically, and I can't believe that I'm going to tell you this story, but we played all week, okay, and we're starving artists. Believe that cliche, man. Believe every bit of it. And we're waiting to get paid, and all these Houston cops came in and said, okay, boys, time for you to go. We're like, well, okay, yeah, but we're just going to get paid, and we're going to go. And they said, nope, there's no pay. See you later. And they drew their guns.
Whoa.
Yeah, and said, nope, time for you boys to go. We're like, holy, what's going on here? And the club owner just looked at us, and we're like, okay, we'll be going. So what we did was, this is a funny story. I can't believe we're starting an interview like this, but Alan.
Killer,
so
man.
What we did was we obviously had a shit tank in the bus.
Uh-huh.
We went back in the middle of the night, and we plastered the entire building with our shit. Forget that.
Awesome.
Look, we could have burned the place down. We didn't do that.
Yeah.
We destroyed the system inside when we were breaking down. We didn't do that. We just covered the place in shit. It was awesome. So, but yeah, we got completely screwed, and the police were all in on it, man. I'll never forget. It was like a little freaking mafia ring, and I'm Italian, so I know all about that. But anyway, okay, that was my Houston story. What's going on, man?
Well, I'm just going to add this anecdote. They shit on you, so you, in effect, shit on them.
Woo! Yeah!
Rim shot.
Oh!
Well, I tell you what, we've started this, so let's just go with this.
Hey, everybody, this is Johnny Giuelli from Hardline, and I'll give you the right to rock. Woo!
With a guy we've been wanting to have on the show for many, many moons when he re-entered into the rock and roll lifestyle, if you will, back in 98, Mr. Johnny Gioelli from Hardline.
Hey, brother, what's up? You said that like the like he was a pasta dish. That was perfect.
Johnny Gioelli! Yeah. I could have went crazy with it.
A little cheese on that, man, right?
Exactly, man. Exactly. Johnny, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm fantastic. I am absolutely fantastic. I'm sitting in my humble abode here on the East Coast. I moved from California and moved back to my roots on the East Coast here. Enjoying life, man. Enjoying making music. Enjoying engaging with fans around the world. Getting into this whole social media thing. This is, I'm an old school guy, so everyone has to go easy on me. And just loving life, bro.
That's awesome, man. And I do bring this up, in the little intro thing. But, I've been a fan of your vocals. You're such a strong vocalist, and you kind of stepped away from it for kind of a short period of time when Axel Rudy Pell said, hey, you kick ass, you have to sing. You have a gift. You have to come back to rock and roll. So, what kind of... I guess, you had Hardline and then you got in this grunge thing that killed a lot of the music that a lot of us love. But, grunge didn't last as long as hard rock and heavy metal because we're still kicking in the grunge. I don't know what it's doing anymore. So,
yeah.
Kind of take us, if you will, and I'm sure you've hatched this out a million times, but if you want to give us kind of an abbreviated version of, kind of what did you do when you walked away from the music industry. I'm sure you were kind of sick because record companies screwed you and stuff like that, and then you get the call from Axel. At that point, did you think, okay, I might try this out for a little while, but other than that, I kind of want to do something else? Were you actually doing something else, or were you still kind of singing and trying to do commercials and stuff like that during that time?
Sure, man. I don't know that I can give you an abbreviated
Give us a whole thing, man.
I may have to give you the whole enchilada here. So what happened was, after Hardline and grunge played an active role in destroying that band because, you know, MTV stopped playing videos, radio stopped playing rock, radio stations went away, and this happened. It's really wild, man. I never forget it. It was John Kolodner from Geffen came into the studio and said, "Boys, great album. Too bad no one's going to hear it." Like, what are you talking about, man? He goes, "Yeah, it's over. You're not going to see a video on MTV anymore. Radio stations are going to dry up. It's over, man." And we're like, "What are you talking about?" And I just sort of ignored him, but he was so, so brilliant and so right. And after that all happened, I went into, as any normal artist would, went into a very deep depression and tried to figure out, okay, what's next, man? What do I do? This was my lifeblood. And, you know, your listeners and you need to understand, I've been a professional musician since I was 11 years old. I played nonstop. When my friends were playing with Tonka toys and digging holes in the dirt and fishing on the weekends, I was playing clubs. I was making music. I was in the studio. I don't remember many days in school. So it was my lifeblood. And after it gets torn down, you know, it was like my personal 9/11. I went into a deep depression and said, okay, I'm just going to take a step back and relax and figure things out. It was Serafino, the owner of Frontiers Records, who sent me an email. Of course, Axel happened in 98. And for me, that was, I didn't know it was going to be an 18-year project, man. I didn't know. I just said, okay, this stuff is cool, wizards, dragons, rainbows, and, you know, black moons and purple suns. I grew up with Sabbath and Rainbow and so, and Dio, you know, for me to sing that stuff, I said, oh, you know, I'll do this. You know, it's in Europe, and it doesn't affect anything in the U.S. He doesn't have an audience here. That's what I thought at the time. And so I did that project just to keep my blood, you know, flowing musically. But it was Serafino from Frontiers who wrote me an email one day. He said, "Johnny, I want to do a hardline record." And I said, "Let me give you just a really quick answer. No." It was absolutely no. And he's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "No, not interested, thanks." He goes, "No, you have to." I go, "What do you mean I have to?" I said, "No, I'm not doing it." He said, "Well, people, the world, fans, me," meaning him, "want your voice on songs. You can't let your voice not be heard." And I was so touched by that. And I said, "Serafino, I get that. And I appreciate it. And I'm so grateful. And I respect that, but they can buy the Double Eclipse record and you can hear my voice." But, and he kept pushing, bro, and pushing and pushing and pushing. And he was so sincere that I said, "Okay, let's try it. Let's do it." And I did, man. And I'm grateful to him because it's sort of, I mean, it's, this was my baby, man. Everything that that Double Eclipse record was the, you know, prior to that record, I was in musical puberty, man. I was growing hairs in places. And I, you know, I it was my whole life in that record. Some of those songs, you know, like, you know, we even recorded Face the Night, which was on Hardline 2, but we recorded for Double Eclipse. It's recorded. It's in the archives of MCA. It was my, everything I'd worked so hard for was in that record. And then when things, you know, fell apart, naturally, it was a difficult situation. So for Serafino to, you know, get my legs back, I'm grateful, and that's why I've done so many records with him. So, you know, that's my story. And, you know, in between also, in 1995, my brother and I, we were on a tour bus. We were doing some kind of hardline thing, and we developed this thing called the Information Superhighway, which we now call the Internet. And we actually built a very, very large company in California. My brother and I invented the Internet Gateway. So when you when you use your credit card to buy something online, that transaction that happens between your credit card and the issuing bank, say you're working with, you know, Bank of America, whatever, That check to make sure you have the money for the purchase, we invented that transaction gateway. And we built a very, very big company around it, and we did very, very well. And Joe is still operating that business, and I sold my portion because I just want to relax and enjoy my family and music. And so, you know, some of that downtime was also cultivating that business as well. I wasn't in that deep of a depression. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there was a lot of stuff that happened between that the end of Hardline, Double Eclipse record, and 98. So anyway, that's the story, man. I know it was not at all abbreviated at all.
Well, that's cool. That's very interesting, because one of my follow-up questions was, you know, what's Joey up to? I know he was on 2, but after that he's been out of the fold, but it sounds like he's busy running a company. So does he still have any real desire to play, or is it more, hey, I'm a businessman, I've got other things going on in my life that are more important at the moment?
You know, it's a combination of both. I mean, his heart has always been in music first, and it was my brother who inspired me to play music. You know, he's 6 years older than I am, and I'm a little kid, and I'm watching my brother in his high school rock band in our basement. How could you not want to do what your brother's doing? And that's exactly the way it happened. And then, you know, life takes over, and yeah, he definitely put his guitar down for a while, and but we're now talking about doing a 25th anniversary reunion, a bunch of reunion shows with, I know we'll, you know, most likely have 4/5 of the original members. I'm not sure whether Neil's schedule would work, because, you know, the Journeys, they play a lot of shows, and he has Santana Project and a lot of other stuff. I've talked to Neil back and forth, and we're just kind of like, okay, if we can do some shows together, if the timing and everything works out, we'll do it. So I know that my brother is eager to get back on the stage and have this reunion, and I think that could possibly happen. I can't commit to it, but I know that he would love, I know for a fact that he would love to get back on the stage and play, despite, you know, being a hardcore business guy.
Dude, I tell you what, you're just like reading my mind on every additional question.
Oh.
That is awesome, man. Because I was going to ask about the 25th anniversary coming up. Is there anything special planned? I would say, and I'm sure you guys are already thinking about this, but if you do get Neil for one show, is that one you would say, hey, we got to film this for, you know, the fans can't be there, you know?
Yeah, we would definitely stream it. Absolutely, we would. Sure, because I, you know, it's difficult to find that venue that can appreciate the history of that record and that lineup. So I think it would be unfair not to stream it to everyone. You know, so we would definitely do that, man, for sure.
That would be incredible. Well, I tell you what, you've got a brand new record, Human Nature.
Yep.
Let's just step back 1 second.
Sure.
How would you compare this to Danger Zone? What are the differences in those two records?
Well, you know, Danger Zone was written primarily by Alessandro, and then, of course, I always tweak everything because it's just, you know, it's what I do. And this record was a real group effort, and Alessandro and I wrote it together, and then everyone's talent on it, I also consider writing. I hate when people, you know, look, if you write lyrics and you write melody and you write music, okay, yeah, I guess you technically wrote the song, but the song's not written until everyone has their talent in it. So when Josh plays on a song, it brings it to a whole different level than it was before a scratch track on it. So it's all writing. So what's different is we wanted to capture as much power in the music as we could, similar to Double Eclipse, but I'm going to tell you, we never try to compare, we never try to write for, you know, a certain, you know, what am I trying to say? What I'm trying to say is we don't try to write something. We write it because we want to be creative, and it's within us, and we bring it out. I think it's the kiss of death when a lot of musicians say, oh, I want to write a song like this, or I want it to sound like this. We just knew we wanted to make a heavier sounding record, but that's all we knew, bro. That was it. The rest just came out. So, you know, word on the street is that it sounds, has a similar feel to Double Eclipse. That's cool. That it is heavier. I think it is. And we did that because, you know, we want to gear up towards, you know, live shows. End of May, we're definitely going to do a European tour. It's already in the works. We have some dates already solid, and we'll let all media know what's going on there. But that's, for me, that was the major difference. This record is geared way more towards live performance, and it's heavier, which I like.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one's heavier, and I was going to ask you, I mean, early reviews, has anybody kind of compared and said, hey, this, some of this material could have been on Axl, some of the stuff you do with Axl, minus Dragons and Purple Suns. Yeah. It's got a heavier feel that I've heard from Hardline, and I like it too. I like a heavy melodic sound, and your voice is just awesome on top of all that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I hear some of the, you know, some of the vocal inflections that could be an Axl, you know, style tune. So, yeah, you know, and I think that's maybe psychologically in writing a blend of all the projects. I mean, that would be a natural thing to happen. And what I find is a lot of the Johnny fans do cross into all of the projects. So I guess if you like someone's voice, you're going to listen to all the things they do.
Definitely.
Which is so great, which I love, man. I'm so grateful for. So, yeah, man, I agree with you. I can hear some of that. I played some of the stuff for Axl, and he's like, oh, that's a lot of chord changes. It's too much. More of an AC/DC simple kind of chord structure guy. We had a good laugh. I said, what do you mean it's just chord changes? I said, Axl, anything more than three chords is going to throw you through a loop. We had a lot of laughs. But, you know, he gets it. And, yeah, and vocally, I can hear what you're saying, man. No question about it. There's definitely – it has that blend minus the, yeah, Purple Dragons and Red Rainbows. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. As far as recording, and it sounds – I think I know the answer to my question. It sounds like you guys all got in the studio and recorded rather than a lot of file sharing. Or was there some file sharing involved?
Well, the only file sharing that was involved was with me, because I like to cut my vocals in my studio. Not that I'm against going to someone else's studio, but I'm comfortable. And my life is about balance, man. You know, I have family, I have businesses that I own, I have music, I have, you know what I mean? So for me, it's got to be a balance. And so just to make it all happen together was difficult. But all the basic tracks, yes, man, we're old school. We put Chesco through the ringer, man, but having him beat those drums. And I'm an old school guy. I'm really not into all this auto-tuning crap. You know, if we make a mistake, here's a concept, man. Play it again.
Exactly.
If I sing a line and I don't like it, sing it again. I mean, what the hell? I'm not going to have a computer adjust my voice to make something right. If it's wrong, I re-sing it. So I still have that. I can't help it. But I have that old school mentality. And you know what? I encourage young musicians coming up, to be themselves. Art is art. If you're not the best singer in the world or the best guitar player in the world, for God's sakes, man, don't let the computer be you. Who cares if it's not perfect, man? It's still art. It's still who you are. And appreciate what you have within you musically. Because, you know, I listen to a lot of shitty music. I really do. We all do. Mm-hmm. But there's always something in it that I learn, and there's something in it that I appreciate. It could be a phrasing, the way the singer phrases a line, the way they put the words, you know, in a measure against the drums, where they place it. Could be cool, man. It could be so out of tune but has the coolest vibe. So I encourage young musicians to Be themselves, man. Don't let these computers overtake your creativity, man. Lay it down. Okay, use the computer to record it, but stop putting all this crap on it and stop letting the computers adjust time. And if you know what I mean? Oh, I could go on and on about that, bro.
But, oh, I'm with you 100%. I'm old school too, man. I don't like any of that crap either. It's I like just a good – I like – the bands that I'm hearing, and I'm hearing more of this. I think there was a stretch a few years ago where, especially with guys that are in different places in the world, they were doing the file sharing. But it seemed like sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't work as well as everybody in the studio. I get with you doing the vocals outside, and you were probably in the process of watching the guys, you know, put this music together. But having everybody in a room creating, I think you get more out of that than, okay, the guitar player had this idea and he recorded his part and no one's communicating. You know, it's just a little bit, oh, email, oh, that's all right. So I like what you guys did, and it gives you more of an organic sound.
We did that for the first Hardline record, too. People don't realize that all those rhythm tracks were live. One, two, three, go, band. We were like, Dean, okay, so for example, let me pick a song. Life's a Bitch starts out with drums. We just hit record and said, okay, Dean, go.
Nice.
So, you know, enter the way you want. And it came out, first take. That was it. And Joe, Neil taught everybody, and I sang a scratch track along with – it was live. That record was live.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the solos too that Neil played, we wouldn't let him play again. He's like, "Oh, let me hit that again." Like, no way, man. It's perfect. So,
yeah.
Anyway, love that approach to making records, and I know it's not common today. I hope things, you know, sometimes things just come full circle. Maybe it'll come around again, and that whole organic feel will happen. That grassroots thing will happen again. But that's the way we made Human Nature. I think, I hope everyone hears it that way. The vocals aren't perfectly pitched. You mean listen closely? That's who we are. That's real, man.
Exactly. Well, let's jump into the record, and I want to bring up one of the first tracks I wanted to bring up was a good one, and it's a little different for you guys. Trapped in Muddy Waters. It almost has kind of a nasty blues type riff that starts it, and then it goes into kind of a more of a classic Hardline type sound. Do you have a cool story of how that song came together?
Yeah.
And I don't really I wish I had this over-the-top awesome story to tell you. It's just I've never been a blues guy. I really haven't. Neil was, and I just never listened to blues. And I got with Alessandro. I said, I want to do something that is just, as you said, a blend of a blues feel and a traditional hardline tune. And that's what came out. And, you know, of course, everyone knows, you know, Muddy Waters. And it was just, we just wrote it and... There's and I really didn't know if I did a good job on it. As a matter of fact, when I cut that vocal track, I cut it in one take, and I sent it to Alessandro. I said, Alessandro, listen to it, but, you know, man, I can hit it again, and let me just, you know, let me sing it a couple more times. And he wrote me back. He goes, are you kidding me? See, I'm not a blues guy, so I don't think, you know, bluesy, but it worked, man. I mean, I wish I had this amazing story to tell you that I fell in a swamp. I was trapped in the muddy water, but it just didn't quite happen like that. We just sat down. We had an idea. I was like, man, that's cool. Let's go. You know, it just kind of happened like that.
Well, it's a really cool tune. Really cool Thanks. Tune. It's probably my early favorite. Another one I wanted to bring up was United We Stand, and I don't know if that's one you wanted to get out there with, you know, be a little bit more help the troops type thing or something like that, but that's a really cool track as well.
Thanks, man. You know, the whole basis for this record is, you know, artists, you know, if you're a painter and you go outside and you see a cool looking tree and you want to paint it, you know, you create, right? And so you're influenced by what you see, what you hear, what you feel. And there's no doubt that we have been just bogged down with negativity through our media. On television, I mean, with bombings and shootings and this and that and the other, environmental changes and our weather and all this stuff, man. So as an artist, you can't help but be absorbed into this thing. So this record is, I wouldn't call it a concept record. People have called it that. It's just this is what I was feeling at this time. In my life, and you know, and that's when I get, you know, I get a little annoyed when people compare to Double Eclipse. Double Eclipse was that time in space, and this record is this time. And you know, I recall writing Hardline 2. There's a lot of songs on Hardline 2. I was angry. Songs like Why, Tell Me Why. I mean, I was pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And this record, I was more baffled. Baffled the way we're thinking as humans, what we want, you know, out of life. And look, man, I'm going to tell you, I am living, breathing fact that I came from a high-paced, fast-paced world, California. I had houses and planes and helicopters and I had four restaurants and I barely knew my family. I was never home. I was driving 130 miles an hour in my Porsche to get to meetings. And it's wrong, man. And we need to take a simple approach to life and pull out what's really necessary. And the pace this world is moving at, man. And I get the technology. It's cool. I like some of it. Don't get me wrong, man. I dig it. I dig the fact that I can engage and be social with people that I couldn't be before. But going back to simplicity is where I'm at, man. And that's the basis of this record is I'm baffled with the way we're thinking as humans. And I want everybody to try to just like hit the reset button. You know when you burn up a belt on your vacuum cleaner because you ran over a rug or something, you sucked in a someone's belt or whatever? Mm-hmm. You got to hit that reset button. I just wish we could all hit that reset button again. So there's a if you listen to the record again and just listen to some of the lines, you can sense the frustration and, you know, I think we all have at this point with, you know, environmental stuff and just what we're seeing on happening in the world, man. So that's, you know, it's human nature. And that's where the whole album title came from. It's just human nature.
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting. If you look at the song titles, too, not saying it's a concept record, but it seems like there's kind of a common thread with the subject line of what you're singing about on this record, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it and again, we didn't try it. It just what was within us, and it's what came out, and it works. And, you know, writers have to please yourself, man. I mean, I'd love to say, hey, man, bro, I wrote a killer song for you, but you have to write for yourself, just like a painter paints, and then hopefully someone likes his painting and buys it. So, you know, for me, it's just about being artistic and enjoying now creating music, and then when people accept it, man, that's the whipped cream and cherry, man, right there.
Well, you know, I think you hit a point that I find very interesting, especially with a guy that's been doing it as long as you have. And I'm hearing this from more artists that we talk to and so forth. But a lot of it, I guess back in the day, you're trying to please. Well, first off, you're writing for yourself and you're writing great songs. And then you get influenced by people in your ear, record companies are in your ear, and you're writing for them or you're writing for that next hit. But the guys that are seasoned veterans, you know, been playing 20, 30 years, they do it for themselves now. And I think that's why we continue to get solid product from a guy like yourself and other artists that have seasoned that say, you know, this is for me. I'm doing this for me now. I don't have to please anybody else but me. And if other people like it, great. I don't know if you're friends with the guys from Harum Scarum. That's kind of their philosophy since I got back together was, we kind of do it for us, and if you guys like it, great. And I think that's awesome, and we're getting great music because of that attitude.
I don't know those guys, but yeah, I'm of the same mentality, man. And I'll tell you a story, because when you say things, it kicks up stories from the past. I can tell you, I recall, I had this loft studio in my home in California, and this was in between records, Hardline Records. We were preparing for not the live record, but the next studio record. And I remember the A&R guy calling me saying, Johnny, I want you to take the next 2 weeks and write me two hits. And I laughed. I literally laughed. And I said, Paul, and God rest his soul, he passed away. I said, Paul, that's not me, man. I will write songs, but I'm not going to force anything to come out. And I don't. So some of the time that happens in between Hardline Records is because of that, man. I just refuse to sit down with a pad and paper. I'll share this. Well, let me finish my statement. I refuse to sit down with a pad and paper and say, okay, I'm going to write a song now. That is just pure crap. Doesn't work for me. It may work for others. Doesn't work for me. So the song off of the very first album, off of Double Eclipse, In the Hands of Time, There's a lyric in there that says, staring at an empty page, will it come to me? That is based off of that scenario. Being forced to sit down and look at a blank page and say, oh my God, what's, you know, I got to write a song here. Now, that particular lyric was not from that record company call. That lyric was, I'm actually, I'm a religious guy, and sometimes I'm baffled where the ideas come from. It just kind of pops into my head. And so I always go, my God, when are the ideas going to stop? And if they stop, then I stop. And that's where that line came from, staring at an empty page, will it come to me? And it always does. And I wonder, will the light ever shine on me? I just, all these things, you know, that an artist goes through, you know, emotionally when writing a song. But I am not the guy to sit down in a studio and go, okay, I'm going to write a song today. Let's hear, ooh, doo, 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 doo. No, I can't do it, man. I have to be inspired by something I hear, feel, or see. End of story, period, end.
That's killer, man. That is killer. Thanks for sharing that. That is very interesting. And it comes through in your music. I mean, you can tell you've worked hard on these songs, and you're not just slapping something together, you know, and it's awesome. Heartfelt.
I hope so. Thank you, bro. I hope so, because that is really the way I do it. I will tell you, follow up to that story, I did try, man, because, you know, technically I was employed by Universal Music, MCA. And when my now wife, girlfriend at the time, came home, my studio was filled with crumpled white paper. I tried, man. I'd write a line and go, that's horrible. Scrap, crumple, throw. Next, crumple, throw. It was. She was like, what the hell is going on in here? I said, they want me to write a couple songs. I can't just sit here and write a song. And a lot of the songs, I think my favorite songs, either came to me in the middle of the night, I don't know why, or, this is going to kill you, man, and I'm sorry to do this to you listeners, but on the toilet. I don't know. There's a sense of calm when you're sitting on the toilet. It's your space, man. It's like that 4x4 space. No one can get to you. The door's locked. You're doing your thing, doing whatever you want to do in there. For me, that, I don't know, something happens, man. I get creative sitting on the pot. Oh, my God, man. I can't believe that.
I will second that motion, in that if you're busy doing your business thing the whole day, or you're in your car, you really don't have any time to yourself, especially if you got a, you know, family and stuff like that. So yeah, when you take that 15 minutes to go take a shit, or my wife will say, why are you in this so long? And she'll hear, like, pages flipping. I'm reading a magazine or something, like, this is my only solace for 15 minutes, just to have a little me time. And if I get inspired to do something else, that's awesome. So you got a little notepad by the toilet, I'm guessing.
I absolutely do, and I call it the shit report. So if someone texts me, I'm just like, look, I'm right in the middle of a shit report. And yeah, dude, I don't know what it is, man, but it's that solitude. You're right. And I can and a lot of cool songs. I'm not going to tell you what songs, because it would just destroy the whole fantasy behind the song. But a lot of songs have come out with sitting on that porcelain seat, man. No nice. Question.
Nice.
That's it. Sorry, people.
That is awesome, man. I mean, now I'm dying. I got to know what your favorite song you ever wrote on the toilet was, but I don't know if you're going to give it up.
No, I'm not giving it up, brother. Sorry. That one's got to stick with me. But more to come, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, let me ask you this. As far as writing is concerned in the new record, was there a song that made the record that was kind of a hard one to write and you thought, well, this might not make it, and maybe now it's one of your favorites? Human Nature. Was there a song that was really challenging that you thought, we might just have to scrap this, and then you worked on it, it came to light, and possibly could have turned out to be one of the favorite songs on the record for you?
Well, bro, I will tell you, I wish I had a good story for you on this one, but no. This whole record came out so fast creativity wise. You know, it just poured out, and it was so easy to make. We finished this thing. I did the vocals in 3.5 days. Done.
Wow.
Done.
That is awesome.
Yeah, 3.5 days finished, and I was pissed that I needed that extra half a day. But and that's the way it should be, man. I mean, if you prepare, you write the song, and it comes from within, it should just be so easy to record and do. So, no, we had zero challenges. We didn't have any song where we said, oh, God, that just didn't come out right. Forget it. Mm-hmm. Nope, not at all. We knew exactly what we wanted to write, record, and here it is.
That's killer, man. Well, as far as playing live, is there a song? I would go with this. I would say you should open your show with Where Will We Go From Here, because it's just kind of in your face and starts off the record really strong. Is there a song you're really looking forward to playing live?
Number one for me, for sure, on the live front. And Running on Empty, I also love. And it's growing on me more and more. You know, I've been really getting into running lately, you know. And on the last Axl tour, I ran, oh my God, 50, 60 miles in 3 weeks. I was just like, okay, guys, see ya. And I would just go running. Excuse me. And that one's growing on me, too, because as I'm running out of steam, I always put on Running on Empty and for my last mile back to the tour bus or the hotel, wherever I was. But, you know, I'm a sucker for a ballad, and I think Love is Going to Take You Home. Playing that live is going to have some great emotional power, and I can sort of envision it already, and I'm excited to do that one, too. But so those, you know, those three I'm definitely pumped to play.
Nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so you said you guys were going to be doing a tour of Europe. When's that start?
End of May. So we're slated to begin in Spain, and I have no idea where we're finishing, my brother. No clue. So it's still in the works. I know Spain is done. We're going to do Portugal. We're going to do Italy. Where else are we going? Germany. Bulgaria. So it's all in play right now, and things are getting solid. So as soon as we know, we'll certainly make sure the world knows too.
Awesome. Is there any chance you guys might do a show or two in the States, or is that kind of, I know the market's not real strong for something like that, but is there any thought?
So since we're interesting you asked that question, because since we're going into our 25-year anniversary, Jesus, I'm getting old.
We all are, but
quick double eclipse. We are attempting to, and it's starting to come together, put some original lineup shows together for the U.S. So, yes, that is also in play. Now, we know that we'll probably most likely use 4/5 of the original lineup. I don't know that Neil can make these shows because his journey schedule is really off the charts. So I don't know. You know, I talked to Neil here and there, and we'll see. But U.S. shows with the Italian lineup, maybe. I don't know if your listeners know how difficult it is to get a European-based band into the U.S. The work visa process, man, I think I lost about 7,000 hairs in my head.
Oh,
just
man.
Like, yeah, we did this Rock and Skull Festival thing, was it last year or whatever? And I couldn't get them here, man. I had lawyers and everything. I could not get them here. It's crazy. And, you know, and you can't just come in and say, oh, yeah, I'm going on vacation. That doesn't work here anymore. They got to know why you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I couldn't get them here. So to have that lineup come to America, very difficult. To have the original lineup play is my preference for U.S. and my preference for celebrating our 25-year Double Eclipse anniversary. So, yeah, stay tuned with that, man. We're definitely working on it. It's and I think we're gonna get at least, you know, two or three big shows with that lineup.
Oh, man, that would be awesome, and please film it. I'll be first in line to buy that DVD.
Yeah, oh, thank you, man. Yeah, and if we do that, and since we're going to do a limited number of shows, we'll definitely stream certain shows that everyone could take part in the festivities, and that's going to be just a blast. You know, I talk to Dean just about every other day. If we don't talk, we text. You know, what's going on, brother? You okay? How you doing? You strong? Everything cool? Because everyone knows, you know, Dean went through a tough time in his life, and he's recovered from that. He even quit smoking. I mean, he's just doing so great. And so, you know, I love Dean. He's my brother, and we stay in touch. So we're going to do everything in our power to make it happen. It's whether, you know, life stuff, you know, whether that gets in the way, and promoters and, you know, money and, you know, the economics and, you know, all that stuff, when that starts to rear its ugly head, that can sometimes kibosh things. But we're trying really hard to make that happen. I think the fans would love it. And,
oh,
you know, with all this social engagement, you know, it's really – I'm blown away, man, with how well-received, you know, this music has been for people and the life experiences. I mean, I never knew because, you know, prior to social media, I never knew that, you know, certain songs – changed people's lives, have stopped them from committing suicide, have broke them out of depressions, have, I mean, man, I've learned how powerful this music really is, man. And so I got to keep it alive as much as you guys accept it, and if you continue to accept it, I'll continue to keep making it. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, all the listeners and all the support all the time. I'm grateful, man.
Well, we're glad you're doing this, Johnny, because you put out good, solid music that we all love. And we love the old stuff as well as the new stuff, because the new stuff's killer as well, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it big time.
Well, Johnny, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Oh, man. Always. Are you kidding me? I could talk to the fans for the next 7 weeks straight without stopping, eating, taking a breath. But you know, I always go back to this. I'm really consistent, and I'll just say this to everyone listening. I appreciate you guys. There isn't a day that passes that I don't. And I'm also consistent with saying, without you guys, I'm just a voice. I'm a voice. I'm nothing without the acceptance and the support from the fans, you know, from the listeners all around the world. So I don't ever for one second take it for granted. I say it just about at every show live, how I appreciate everyone, and I really do from deep within my soul, because it just cannot happen you know, without you guys. So what I'm saying is a massive, heartfelt thank you to everyone for a very, very long career, man. I'm at this for over 30 years, over 35 albums, and again, thanks to everyone for listening and supporting.
Well, Johnny, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis Ragman Show here on therightrock.com. And we want to tell the fans to grab Hardline's Human Nature out on October 14th on Frontiers Records. Man, Johnny, this was awesome, dude.
Man, I appreciate it, too. I love taking the time with you, and horns up, brother.
Horns up, brother, and good luck with everything, and if you can make it to Houston, I will be in the front row.
Oh, man, are you kidding? I have to, because I love that Texas-shaped macaroni. Every time I visit, I got to bring some of that home. I mean, who has that?
No joke. You know what? I feel bad here. I have to bring up one more thing before I let you go.
Sure.
You're working on a solo record, and you're working with the Pledge to get that started. Would you want to talk about that real quick?
Oh, yeah, man. Shoot, I actually forgot, too. And it's perfect that we talk about it, because it all ties into how I love my fans. Quick story, and I'll try to keep it as brief as I can for you. In my hometown here in Connecticut, a young 17-year-old boy dove into the water at the Long Island Sound. I live in Connecticut. And he hit a rock, and he shattered his C5 vertebrae, and he's paralyzed now from the chest down. He has some head movement, one arm, and that moves fairly okay, and he's rehabilitating. And when this happened, these friends, you know, were family friends. We were obviously devastated. And you go through that whole devastation, like, wow, how could that happen? And, man, your life can change in 1 millisecond, man. 1 millisecond, you're perfect, you're normal, next you're in a wheelchair, and it's real. And I said, man, I've got to do something. Now, I could easily just cut a check and say, here you go, guys, and so many people did that, and that's wonderful. It's amazing, the financial support, the emotional support, but I wanted to do something a little bit different. So I decided to do a solo record. I've never been like a solo guy, you know. I've always been a team guy, same bands for 18 plus years. But I want to do this, and I want to do it for Joe Barber. His name is Joe Barber. He's the greatest kid, and has his whole life ahead of him. He's now 19, just turned 19. And so I decided to do a solo record and do it on the Pledge Music platform. And what's so great about it is, you know, back in the day, it was secretive, man. Where you recorded, where you rehearsed, no one knew. Like, where's Van Halen recording their new record? Who the hell knew? I wanted to open up to all the fans, engage with them, and be charitable at the same time. So now someone can go to pledgemusic.com/Johnny Gioeli. I know that's a lot to absorb. Pledgemusic.com/Johnny Gioeli. And pledge for memorabilia. I've given away guitars. I've given away 90% of my memorabilia through Pledge for donation for Joe and the solo project. But what it's done for me was engage me with fans I didn't know I had, man. And I mean fans in Afghanistan, Iran. And it's opened my eyes up to a whole new level of appreciation for our world, man. And when we get down about how shitty it seems from a media perspective, I got to tell you, man, it's 99.999% beautiful. And, you know, we all, you know, we get frustrated with things we hear, like, for example, Afghanistan. We're like, oh, we just drop a bomb on these guys. No, there's beautiful people there. I had a young brother and sister write me. They're massive Johnny fans. Where do they live? Afghanistan. And I'm able to connect with them and say, you guys all right? Is everything cool? Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's dangerous, but we're okay. And we love your music, Johnny. I mean, man, how amazing is that? And these people could donate to anyone, to any charity. You and I could name 1,000 charities right now. But they're such believers in this music, and they're such great fans, and so appreciative and respectful of this young man that they're donating to him through my music. So that's what I'm doing, and we're going to let the dust settle on Human Nature and let it run its course. You know, I don't want to just like like every day there's a new album out there. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to enjoy Human Nature, and then I'll follow up with, you know, December, January, February, the solo album. But it's all done through the fans. The fans are creating this record, and it's all charity for Joe. And we just did a cool Connecticut morning television show yesterday, which was a lot of fun. And you know, it's just I'm trying to you pay this thing forward. And I've been so blessed, man. I've had a great career, and I had to help him, man. This was in my backyard. You know what I mean? It's right here. So real. And anyway, that's what I'm doing. And there was nothing short about that story. I'm sorry, but it had to be told.
No. That is awesome, dude. You are you're a good man. That is great that you're doing that, dude.
Thanks, man. I'm trying. So, yeah, that's what's happening, and let's we'll keep it going. It's like your show and others that keep this all alive, and the listeners, of course. So let's keep it rocking, brothers.
You got it, man. And Johnny, whenever you want to come back, you are always welcome, man. It was an honor to talk to you.
Likewise, man. Thanks for everything. And we'll talk after the solo album is released and catch up on some of those tunes. How about it?
Ragman, and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast. And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out. And keep checking us out. And horns up.